We begin with an archival recording of the celebrated 20th century poet Langston Hughes from a recording titled Ask Your Mama on the AV label.
This is Langston Hughes, and I am reading from my new book of poems, Ask Your Mama, 12 Moods for Jazz. In fact, I think one might call the book a single poem, because although it's divided into 12 sections, its thematic unity holds it together, I believe. This poem was written in segments beginning at Newport, at the Newport Jazz Festival, in fact, two summers ago. And I suppose that is why, as I wrote most of it, I could hear jazz music behind it. And so when I gave the first readings of some segments of this poem, they were read to jazz. However, the poem may be read with or without music, of course.
Langston Hughes telling us he began writing Ask Your Mama at the Newport Jazz Festival, and we'll soon learn that he intended to collaborate with jazz bassist Charles Mingus originally. This is a piece Mingus composed for a symposium of music and poetry. Langston Hughes collaborated with Lonnie Elder III on the narration for this piece.
I talk to myself in public places and hum jazz tunes. I love jazz. But soon I have to make it uptown to that old furnished room of mine.
We're told the 12-part jazz poem titled Ask Your Mama was dedicated originally to Louis Armstrong and scored by Langston Hughes with a mix of music including blues, Dixieland, gospel, boogie-woogie, bebop, progressive jazz, Latin cha-cha, and Afro-Cuban mambo music, as well as German leader, Jewish liturgical music, West Indian calypso, and African drumming. Using jazz to reach beyond the limits of any one language, Hughes linked the words and music of his poetry to topical images of the Harlem Renaissance, highlighting people, places, and events of the time. References to a youthful Martin Luther King Jr., as well as the independence leaders of Guinea, Nigeria, Ghana, Kenya, and Congo are heard in the chants and refrains. Hughes began the piece during the Newport Jazz Festival in July 1960, where he shared the stage with Louis Armstrong, Dizzy Gillespie, Horace Silver, Dakota Staton, Ray Charles, and Muddy Waters. The Langston Hughes originally intended to collaborate with Charles Mingus and then Randy Weston on a full performance of his masterwork, Ask Your Mama. It was still in the planning stages when Langston Hughes died in 1967. As for the title, R. Miller Baxter explains, the narrator of the piece draws brilliantly upon numerous techniques, some of them original as well as experimental. He flashes in as well as out of a child's consciousness, yet speaks then from an adult's consciousness. And here is a quote from the poem, "And they asked me right at Christmas if my blackness, would it rub off? I said, ask your mama." Hughes sets verbal language, that is the poem, against even more temporal language, and that is the music, and allows for the music and the words to read the same or to contradict each other in an ironic way. The strategy also creates a reversal of moods. Those words of R. Baxter Miller, writing in an essay titled Framing and Framed, Languages in Hughes' Ask Your Mama 12 Moods for Jazz. Misericordia University in Dallas, Pennsylvania will present the Langston Hughes Project Ask Your Mama 12 Moods for Jazz by the Ron McCurdy Quartet in a multimedia concert involving spoken word artistry, live music, and images to recreate Langston Hughes' vision of the global struggle for freedom from the Harlem Renaissance to the early 1960s. Interestingly, as we heard of the shift between the child and the adult in the poem, as a child, Ron McCurdy grew up in a household with all kinds of music, with literature and spoken word recitations. He even memorized the poetry of Langston Hughes in his youth. And yet he never imagined that he would be drawing on all those different disciplines as an adult to bring Ask Your Mama to life in our day, not as a museum piece, but as a living, breathing work of art that speaks to us now and to our current situation in the world. Recognized jazz trumpeter Ronald C. McCurdy serves as music director and composer for the quartet bearing his name, and he has orchestrated this multimedia presentation based on the original music cues suggested by Langston Hughes. Dr. McCurdy is professor of music in the Thornton School of Music at the University of Southern California. Prior to his appointment, he was director of the Thelonious Monk Institute of Jazz at USC. He previously was appointed professor of music and chair of the Afro-American Studies Department, as well as director of jazz studies at the University of Minnesota. We had a chance to speak by phone with Ron McCurdy about Ask Your Mama and his background, which led to the project.
Both my parents were educators. My father was high school principal and my mother taught third grade. And we always had music in the house. In fact, my father was an amateur trumpet player himself. And he played well enough to inspire me to play. And, you know, like most little boys, they want to emulate their fathers. And that's exactly what I did. And But I knew I had the propensity for music early on, man, because I always loved it. And like I tell my students, I love this Mark Twain quote, where Mark Twain says that the two most important times in a person's life is the first time when they're born, and the second most important time is when they figure out why they were born. And in my case, I knew pretty early on that I was born to be involved in music in one form or another.
So whom did you start listening to, and what kinds of music were you listening to?
Well, again, my parents, my father had a very eclectic collection, everything from the Mormon Tabernacle Choir, the Sons of the Pioneers, to Ella Fitzgerald, to Ray Charles, to Count Basie, to Bach's B minor Mass, to Mahler's Third Symphony. I mean, I heard everything. I mean, so I had a pretty well-rounded listening palette of music to listen to as a kid growing. And I kind of hated it because my father, I mean, I didn't like his music initially, you know. But growing up in your parents' house, you don't have a choice. They get to determine what's going to be played on the record player. So I just heard a lot of music. You know, I heard a lot of everything: jazz, classical, vocal music, country, western, bluegrass, you name it, I heard it.
With educators like your folks, then, what about the literary aspect of it? And when did you first read Langston Hughes?
Again, my parents being educators, my father was very aware of the Harlem Renaissance. And as little kids, I remember my siblings and I, we would have our own little in-family oratorical contest. And I remember as a young child, my father having us recite The Negro Speaks of Rivers by Langston Hughes. I have no rivers, ancient as the world and older than the flow of human blood and human veins. I mean, I remember having to recite that as a kid. And I mean, at that time, I had no idea that part of my life's work would involve exploring Langston Hughes, but we had to learn history. We had to learn about our own history. We had to learn about literature and social conditions and politics. I mean, so we had that kind of upbringing. So I think those seeds were planted quite early in me as a child because of my parents' influence.
Where geographic did you grow up?
A small town called Belgrade, Florida. It's about 40 miles west of West Palm Beach, South Florida.
So you're really on the other side of the world right now.
You know, when I graduated from high school, I went to college at Florida A&M University for my undergrad, and I started my grad studies at Florida State, and I finished my master's and doctorate at the University of Kansas. So I've not lived in Florida since I finished college in my undergrad days. And from there I went to Kansas, and from there I went to teach at the University of Minnesota, and from there I came to USC, which is where I am right now.
As you said so well, those seeds were planted in that expansive background you had would be perfect for this project. How did you discover this particular project?
Great question. I was a professor at the University of Minnesota back in the early 90s, and they had just built what's called the Wiseman Art Museum. It was a Frank Gehry architectural structure, beautiful building, still there today. And the curator had asked if I would put together a program. They were going to have a Harlem Renaissance theme. They had invited Jacob Lawrence to come and be part of the experience. They were going to have a display of Romare Bearden's paintings and other Harlem Renaissance visual arts being displayed. So they were on a musical program, and so they asked me about a year in advance to do this. And, of course, I said yes. And then, like many professors, I forgot about it. About a month before the event, she said, "Dr. McCurdy, how is that program coming along?" And I said, "Oh, yes, it's coming along wonderfully." And I hadn't done a thing. So I scurried back to my office, and I happened to be teaching a unit on the Harlem Renaissance in one of my classes, and I stumbled upon this piece. So we mounted it, like we didn't have much time to rehearse, and we basically improvised this whole performance. In the audience, like, people were really patting their feet and bobbing their heads and really enjoying the presentation. So I told my colleagues, I said, "You know, I think we have something special here. I think we should really rehearse, maybe write some music and do this the right way." And that was back in 1995. And we did so, and since that time, we have done this literally thousands of times all over the world. We did the Disney Hall last year. We did the Barbican in London. We've done Carnegie Hall. We've done colleges and universities and museums and libraries all over the world we've been. So this has become my life's work.
What's so intriguing about this project and this piece is it's not just a jazz work. It's not just a poem. It's not just visual images. It's that wonderful bringing together of different creative aspects of the human soul. And it's sort of a conversation, but it's larger than the sum of the parts, it seems.
Absolutely. And this was Langston Hughes' most epic contribution. I think this serves, you may have read this, serves as his social commentary on the whole struggle for freedom and equality among Africans and African Americans during the 1960s. So there are references to Zeke Ezekwe, Nkrumah, Nasser, Kenyatta, Martin Luther King, Ralph Abernathy, Nina Simone, just a host of people who are referenced in this poem. It's a very rich and deep piece that he's written. And what I tell audiences, sometimes you won't understand or you won't know all the names that he's referencing in the poem, but the intent is to give you just enough inspiration that you'll go and do a little further research on your own.
Sounds like it's the kind of thing where we really need to be in the middle of it.
You kind of do. So you use the word conversation, and that's exactly what this is. This is like a conversation that Langston Hughes is having with his own words and with the music. In fact, you know, he had planned to collaborate with Charles Mingus on this particular work, as he had done previously with a piece called The Weary Blues. And unfortunately, Langston Hughes passed away before they had a chance to explore this work. But the whole idea of how music and the words work in tandem. Now, we did add one component that Langston Hughes didn't have, and that is the videography, the visual component. We thought that because there are so many names referenced in this work that it would make sense to have some visual images that can connect with. So when we talk about Kenyatta or Zeke Ezekwe or Nina Simone, people can get a visual idea as to who those individuals were.
And so this piece has been growing organically since 1995.
It has. It has. We changed the music. I've had maybe three or different iterations of the videography. I've since memorized the poem. So it used to look like an academic presentation. I'd stand behind a podium, and I'd have my glasses on, and I'd be reading the poem. And I thought, that looks really stiff. Langston Hughes wouldn't do it that way. So I actually memorized all 800 lines, and so it's more of a theatrical presentation and interactive, more visual than what it was initially. And in the spirit of Langston Hughes and also Duke Ellington, it is a work in progress. Words don't change, but the overall presentation of how it looks has certainly changed.
And what about the connection or the dedication or the invocation of Louis Armstrong?
Well, Langston Hughes was a huge lover of jazz and jazz musicians. That he could be found on any given weeknight or weekend down on 52nd Street in New York, listening to his favorite jazz musician. So he dedicated this work, in his words, to the greatest horn blower of them all, Louis Armstrong.
Where does Armstrong fit in terms of your heroes as a trumpet player?
Oh, he's near the top. Like Syracuse boy that my father played as a kid. So I heard Hello Dolly, and I heard his, you know, Hot 5 and Hot 7 groups of 1925 and 1928. I heard all those tunes, you know, Short With Some Barbecue. I knew all those tunes growing up as a kid. So, I mean, and Louis Armstrong is truly, I mean, he's one of the ones who changed the whole direction of jazz with how he approached the trumpet and how he approached phrasing and articulating things of that nature. He was, any trumpet player that you run across, any jazz musician, I should say, if they don't understand Louis Armstrong, if they haven't spent significant time with Louis Armstrong, there's probably been some major holes in their playing. I mean, everyone has to bow at the Louis Armstrong altar if you want to be considered a legitimate jazz musician.
You just mentioned that Langston Hughes would be listening to his jazz favorites, and we've been talking about the Harlem Renaissance. You mentioned the painters. You were scrambling to get the music ready for the exhibition and all of those things. What was that meal you like then in Harlem, and is there anything like it today?
The music industry and the music business has changed so dramatically. I mean, think about it. I mean, jazz after World War II, circa 1945, the whole taste of the country changed. Because prior to that time, we were in what we call the swing era. And there were bands playing on almost every corner. I mean, there were all kinds of venues that were available, and all these venues had to have live entertainment. Fortunately, that has kind of gone away now. We probably have more musicians that play at a high level now than any other time in our history. But we don't have as much access, so people have had to kind of change and sort of reinvent themselves. We saw Duke Ellington having to do this. You know, he had his band together for 50-plus years, but he had to reinvent himself because it went from being music for dancing now to music for listening, more of a concert concept. And we see that happening right now, too, where most people who play jazz music for a living, they play for people to listen. People are no longer dancing to jazz anymore. So jazz music has always been, in my estimation, a hybrid kind of music, an amalgamation of many different styles. We saw that with Dizzy Gillespie, with Cuban musicians, Chano Pozo, this whole Afro-Cuban style of jazz. Same thing with the whole melding of Brazilian with Stan Getz, with the girl from Ipanema, with that whole Brazilian sound. I mean, so the music has always been able to latch on to other cultures and other genres. So we find musicians nowadays having to, well, I did this project because I thought to myself, people love jazz. People love spoken word. People love videography. And sometimes we even have a dance component to this presentation. People love a variety of disciplines within the arts. So why not marry these arts to tell your story with even more clarity? That's sort of my thinking. If you're Herbie Hancock or Wayne Shorter or Brad Mehldau, you can just go and play. People are going to come in and just love your music no matter what because you're playing at such a high level. But if you're someone like Ron McCurdy or a number of artists who aren't necessarily household names, I think your story, it needs to be a compelling story that will hopefully inspire people who want to come and partake. That's sort of my way of thinking. So to answer your question, yes, the whole jazz thing has changed, but creativity, the ability to create and storytell, that has not changed because that's what artists do. Whether you're in music, dance, creative writing, dramatic arts, whatever you're doing, art design, you're always in this mode of having to create something and be engaged in some form of storytelling.
In describing it as storytelling with these different modalities coming together and working together in this way, is jazz kind of a metaphor for what we might take away from this experience with Langston Hughes' vision and understanding of freedom and equality that we want to work together as you guys do when you're playing and you listen to each other and you take turns and then you, again, converse with each other and respect each other and build something of a community sense there in creating your music? Does that become a metaphor for what this piece is about?
Erica, that was very well said. That was absolutely brilliant. And that's exactly what jazz music is. Jazz is probably the greatest example of democracy because you've got four or five or more people playing at the same time. But as they're playing, they're having to negotiate whose turn is it to speak. Everyone's voice is equally important, but everyone can't speak at the same time. So you're constantly engaged in this whole concept of deference, where you're deferring to one person or another. And when it's your moment to shine, you shine. When you're done, you step back and you allow someone else to shine. And that's exactly what, when you think about it, that's what happened in life. Everyone has a chance, if you're engaged in conversation, people are having a conversation, everyone can't speak at the same time. Someone has to allow the other person to speak. And so this music is a metaphor for that. I would also say this about Langston Hughes. Langston Hughes was really about bringing people together. And, you know, at a time right now while we engage in so much divisive rhetoric that's happening in our politics and in our social situations today, it was written more than 50 years ago. It is so relevant today because it helps us to understand how we as a people, even though we come from different walks of life, we have different ideologies, we have different religions, we look differently, but we all want the same things. And I think Langston had a very uncanny way of helping everyone to understand how we may have come over on different ships, but we're all in the same boat right now. And we got to figure out how we're going to live and work together and coexist in a very harmonious way. And I've seen this poem. I've seen people who leave our concerts really in this sort of a thought-provoking manner. They're really thinking about their own values, like, what do I believe? What do I believe in? And that's exactly what we want to happen.
Who'll you be bringing with you?
I'm bringing my New York band. I've got Yuma Sun on piano. He's a New York-based pianist, which is Manhattan School of Music and NYU, great musician. I'm bringing Julius Rodriguez, another very fine drummer out of New York. And then Noah Jackson, the bassist, who also went to the Manhattan School many years ago, and he's also a New York bass player. So I'm bringing my A-team. We're going to have a great time, and we're so looking forward to it. I just can't wait to get there.
Ron McCurdy, jazz trumpeter and professor of music in the Thornton School of Music at the University of Southern California, and producer of the Langston Hughes Project, Ask Your Mama, 12 Moods for Jazz. Featuring the Ron McCurdy Quartet, it will be a multimedia concert involving spoken word artistry, live music, and images to recreate Langston Hughes' vision of the global struggle for freedom from the Harlem Renaissance to the early 1960s, and it will take place at Misericordia University in Dallas, Pennsylvania, on Thursday, January 18th at 7:30 p.m. in Le Mans Theater in Walsh Hall. There will be tickets available at the door. The program is free to staff, faculty, and students of Misericordia. For more information, on the web, misericordia.edu, misericordia.edu. The Langston Hughes Project, Ask Your Mama, 12 Moods for Jazz, produced by Dr. Ron McCurdy, featuring the Ron McCurdy Quartet, a multimedia concert with spoken word, music, images, and it will take place on Thursday, January 18th at 7:30 p.m. in Le Mans Theater in Walsh Hall on the campus of Misericordia in Dallas, Pennsylvania, just outside Wilkes-Barre. For more information, on the web, misericordia.edu, misericordia.edu.